Who's your trusted source when it comes to your facility questions, concerns, and needs? Ours is HardTrue, the world's largest manufacturer of tennis court surfaces, equipment, and accessories for over 90 years. Partner with their trusted team of experts, along with collegiate greats Jamie Loeb, Alex Rybakov, and Dustin Taylor, to bring the surface provider of over 30 professional events annually to your facility. Whether it's the red clay of the Houston ATP, the green clay courts of the Charleston WTA, or the official hard court of World Team Tennis, HardTrue has you covered. If you're looking to build a court, convert a hard court to clay, or simply resurface your hard court, work together with HardTrue in their mission to lead the tennis industry by creating better places to play. To learn more about their state-of-the-art surfaces, along with their catalog customizable on-court accessories, check out HardTrue.com or call 877-442-7878 today. That's HardTrue.com or 877-442-7878 today. Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Friday, February 26th. Going to change things up a bit on today's show. Now, all week long, I've focused on the many events happening across the tennis world this week. That means the WTA event in Adelaide, the three ATP 250s, two ATP challengers, and countless ITF and college tennis matches happening across the globe. But there are some things that have happened off the court that I wanted to discuss, and I could think of no better person to do it with than the guest we have on today's show. He is the senior buyer and product manager for all things at Midwest Sports and friend of the program, Dave Lemke, who joins the show to discuss the rise in the number of Americans playing tennis during 2020, that number eclipsing 23 million last year. He and I discuss what that number means for tennis as a broader industry, how we can work to engage those people who are for the first time now exploring tennis or getting back to the sport and finding themselves really enjoying it. And so we talk about that. We talk about the newest gear available at MidwestSports.com. We talk about how the changes in technology are affecting the product we see on the court. And then, of course, we talk about some of the fun we plan on having with our friends at Midwest Sports over the course of the year. We have some really cool things planned that we get to at the end of the show. You're all going to want to stick around to hear, of course. Goes without saying, but the reason these podcasts are made possible due to the fantastic support we get from you listeners, the fantastic support we get from our Patreon family, and, of course, the help we get from our friends at Midwest Sports. Go to MidwestSports.com. Use that promo code CR15 to get 15% off your order. Free 2-day shipping on all orders exceeding $75. Best of all, a free can of Wilson Extra Duty tennis balls. MidwestSports.com. The promo code is CR15. Without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Midwest Sports' Dave Lemke.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Joining us on the podcast once again today, you may know him as the senior buyer, senior product manager, the big wig at Midwest Sports. I know him as my friend Dave Lemke. Dave, welcome back to the show. How are you holding up?
Hey, Alex. Doing all right. Just snow's melting and feels like spring might be coming soon. So we're excited about that. But yeah, all is well. Glad to be back.
I am happy to hear that. And you know, normally we try not to start with 5 minutes on the weather, but whenever I have a fellow Midwesterner, I have to run my theories by them. how ridiculous is it? 4 days ago, it's -3 degrees. If you walk outside, you will develop icicles on your hair if you just showered. And, like, now it's 45. I was sleeveless outside earlier today because it felt that good here in Michigan. I 25 years in, I don't get it.
Well, and I'm about twice your age, so I don't either. It's just the way it is. It's up and down, up and down. We complain about it no matter what. And, you know, you just find a way to get through it. But, yeah, I think it was up in the 50s here today. So it's crazy. But then you've got big piles of snow that are trying to melt. So.
Yeah, the reason I ask, do you try to sneak in an outdoor hit on a 55-degree day, or are the courts just not quite there?
I'll hit some balls outside. I mean, I've got a facility near me where I can hit against the wall. You know, I'll take – hit a couple hoppers of serves just to stay loose, but it's nice to be outside. It's just nice to, you know, kind of breathe the fresh air. And, you know, with all the, you know, protocols in place playing indoors, I did not play as much indoors this winter as I have in past years, not because I didn't feel safe. It was just, honestly, some of the clubs around here were kind of crowded. So, you know, they had everybody spaced out and everything. It was all good, but it was just more of a little more of an effort to play indoors this winter. So, definitely excited to get back outside. If given the choice, I'd play outside every time. So,
See, that hurts my soul. How can you say that? As a Michigan man, I mean, I know you're, I believe you're an Ohio man through and through. It's 9 months a year of indoor tennis. I do feel like, you know, personally, this is a random tangent. My tennis happens to translate better outdoors than indoors. And I think comparatively to Michigan people, that was always a good thing for me. But I mean, whenever we made that transition from outdoors back inside, I was like, oh, I'm never going to miss an overhead. I'm not missing an overhead for the next 2 months because it's just so much easier.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think it was just maybe growing up with, you know, when I was younger, I didn't have the option to play indoors. So sure. I just kind of learned to soldier through playing outside and played baseball for a long time too. So I think I was just, you know, inclined to go outside if given the option. So just that's still kind of hardwired into me. And yeah, I like the variability of playing outside. I like playing on clay in the summer, and just, you know, that's you know, just the way I'm wired, good, bad, or otherwise. So.
No, I love to hear it. I also, and this is such a random tangent, but I guess some of our listeners might be curious. Right before I had left Detroit for Indianapolis to start at Cracked Rackets, I had finally established myself in a rec softball league that was going on in my area. And like, I had, you know, I had multiple team offers. I described myself as the Omar Infante of the Jewish softball league. Anyone needed an infielder, they would have turned to me. And then I finally secured a roster spot, and I haven't found one in Indy yet. So I suppose if anyone's listening in Indy and they've got a spot on their rec softball team, at Great Shot Pod is where you find me. But you're absolutely right. There is a romantic to playing outdoor tennis, that late fall 60 degree night. All right, on that note, right. Yeah, that's a perfect launch point for us, because you talk about the crowds, you know, at some of these indoor clubs. And, you know, we've got some business to get to on this podcast. We'll get there down the road. But the place I want to start, because I always like to hear your perspective on these sorts of things, wonder what you guys are seeing at Midwest Sports. The USTA released a report on, I think it was February 11th, U.S. tennis participation surges in 2020, physical activity council report finds some of the numbers. Tennis participation in the U.S. increased by 22% in 2020, with 21.64 million people hitting the courts, according to recent data from the Physical Activity Council's participation report. They said of the 21 million, 6.78 million were either new or returning lapsed players. Nearly 3 million of those were first-time players, a 44% increase over new players in 2019. Last juicy stat for everyone. Additionally, the 3.82 million Americans who returned to the sport after time away was a 40% increase over the same measure in 2019. You know, anecdotally, I think everyone has shared a story. Certainly, I imagine people who have listened to these podcasts have stories of trying to go to their local park this summer, this fall, whenever it may be, and surprisingly finding that local park filled. Like, it was a trend in California, in Michigan, in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many anecdotes anecdotal stories. We now have numbers to reflect those anecdotes. But I'm curious if you're seeing it on your side as well, because, you know, certainly if you're a first-time player or you're starting to play more frequently, you're going to break strings. You're going to need new, you know, higher quantities of tennis balls. You're going to maybe even look up a new racket model for yourself if you have taken 2-3 years or maybe 10 years off and you're like, wait, Roger Federer used to use the N code, then he switched to the K factor, now he's on something else and I'm way behind.
Then BLX.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a couple of letters behind. I guess my question is, have you guys seen that on your end? Do you think these numbers, as, you know, not doubting the Physical Activity Council's participation report, but do you think there's accuracy in those numbers?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, over the years, it wasn't always as clear, you know, when participation numbers would come out from the USTA, you know, that those numbers were truly reflective, or it was difficult for us to tell that from a retail standpoint. I think in 2020, it was very clear that there's some truth with those numbers. You know, tennis ball sales, you know, court equipment sales, things that are kind of directly correlated to people playing more and getting out more broadly. I definitely think that's a trend that we saw, you know, pretty strongly for a good part of the year. You know, yes, restringing more rackets, you know, selling some pockets of types of rackets that maybe before weren't the strongest sellers. And by that, I mean, set like the pre-strung racket market, you know.
The Prince Hammer, respectfully to Prince. We all know that racket that sits on the shelf at CVS and Walmart.
Wilson Hammer.
Oh, Wilson Hammer. Excuse me.
Yeah. Things like that. Yeah. It's just more like kind of game improvement, you know, larger heads, big sweet spots. But yeah, pre-strung. We call them department store, big box rackets. But, yeah, you know, those are things we dabble in. But that those were definitely areas where we saw quite a bit of growth in 2020, which is extremely positive. I mean, I'm sad that it took a pandemic to create that groundswell. But I mean, if there is a silver lining in it, I think it does seem that a lot more people were looking for maybe new ways to get active again or get back to something that maybe they had done before and enjoyed. Let's be honest. Tennis is a sport you can play until you're an old person. So not a lot of sports can you say that about. So, you know, I think tennis was one of those that fell into some maybe some silver lining from the pandemic. I think golf and running probably saw some similar growth. I think those numbers are definitely being reflected in the increase in business we've seen in a lot of categories. Not everywhere, but you know, it's positive to see. And I think our challenge for 2021 and beyond is to you know, find ways to engage these new players, these returning players, to keep them in the game, because hopefully, you know, things are going to return to normal here sooner than later, you know, vaccines being broadly distributed, and, you know, people are going to feel more comfortable getting back to their normal lives. But maybe they've discovered some new things that they'd like to continue. So we're definitely tasking ourselves pretty heavily with, you know, being able to reach out to people and remarket and engage them in ways that keep them coming back and keep them involved with tennis for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we're so excited to have some pretty cool things underway in our Cracked Rackets Midwest Sports Partnership moving forward to engage everyone who's not just following tennis, but playing tennis on their own, and, you know, giveaways from you guys to make it easier for those players who are still working their way back. And, you know, with first-time players come first-time mistakes. You're going to be using dead strings for, I would say, the first 6 months until you finally pop them accidentally and you're like, oh, it's time for me to get a racket restrung. And from there, obviously, you turn to our friends at Midwest Sports, who can guide you on all things racket, all things equipment-based. And yeah, it's such an interesting question. How do you channel the increased participation? How do you engage with these players? Because it you're right. It's absolutely on the rise. And again, I can only speak from experience. It's also tough for me because I'm a magnet for tennis. Everyone in my life knows if they're doing something tennis related, I'm going to get a text from them. But the amount of, oh, like, Alex, let's go hit. I think I can beat you now. And I just laugh. And I'm like, sure, let's go hit. Let's do that right now. How much money do you want to bet? Yeah, let's bet that amount. But no, it is the question, because moving forward, obviously, for so many of these players, they're going to be interested in, you know, as they get better, or they're going to want to learn how to get better. That will lead to them following the sport. So that will lead to them looking things up on YouTube and just trying to engage with the sport. And it is a fascinating question. I can't remember a similar time. It's just because the science, like, never in the history of tennis has it been the sport that scientists are like, you want to play tennis right now because it's the safest option for it.
Right.
And it's like that happened in 2020. And it's on the powers that be, the USTA and associations around the world, right, to channel that. But it is, I can't remember anything like it. Can you?
No, I'm not. I wasn't around for the Spanish flu in 1980. So, but I can't think of any other time. I mean, I did grow up. I mean, I was a kid in the 70s and 80s. You know, I do, you know, remember that a little bit, where it was a, you know, kind of the lifestyle of tennis. I mean, it was a, you know, kind of the heyday. You know, Borg, McEnroe, you know, Vilas, Vitas Gerulaitis. I mean, players were like that lifestyle. Chris Evert. I mean, that was like a cool thing to do. A lot of that translated over to the look and the fashion of the time. And, you know, even when that kind of waned a little bit, then you had the next generation. You had, you know, Lendl and Becker, and then Agassi and Sampras and Courier and Chang. And, you know, there's been this kind of always kind of ongoing level of interest that was always out there. But I can't remember anything ever being as kind of quickly condensed, really driving people to the game like what we saw in 2020. And again, it's unfortunate that it was being driven by what it was, but I've certainly never seen anything like it where it was being kind of pitched as the safe option, one of the safe sports that you can go play. It's really wild.
Yeah. No, I mean, as the son of Jewish parents, I kind of realized pretty quickly why I was playing tennis, because it was the safe option. I was like, what about football? They were like, they're like, seriously? And I was like, no, I'm not being serious. I just wanted to make sure. But yeah, it's fascinating. And it's always the question, how do you engage all the people around the world who are playing tennis to follow the sport, to be active within the sport? But certainly it does feel like we have a larger pool of people at least paying some sort of attention to tennis than ever before. And hopefully those people will want to update their equipment. And even if you are a lifelong tennis player, there is never a bad moment to treat yourself to the latest gear. Of course, all of that latest gear being offered with the best prices with our friends at Midwest Sports. We want to talk about some of those today, and I feel like it's always pertinent after a Grand Slam to talk about the newest racket models available, because certainly so often that's when players reveal their newest models, particularly in Australia. First Slam of the year, brand new marketing campaigns for all of the big racket companies, all of the big apparel companies. Let's start on the racket side, and let's start with the Babolats, because I'm trying to think. The final this year was Djokovic versus Medvedev. I'm going back in my head, which was the last Grand Slam final to not feature a Babolat racket, because French Open obviously did, U.S. Open did with Dominic Thiem. I'm going back to last year's Australia. Dominic Thiem was also in that. U.S. Open, I think Djokovic won that. So that might have been the last one, was the 2019 U.S. Open. But obviously, it's never a bad time to be a Babolat user. And I believe there are new Babolat Pure Drive family of rackets now available. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Pure Drive was, the racket franchise that kind of turned the racket world on its ear in the 90s, late 90s. Carlos Moya winning the French Open, I think it was in 98, playing with a Babolat Pure Drive. And a guy named Andy Roddick, you know, playing with it as well, and had some great success with it early on. So they kind of helped popularize a racket design they call it a tweener. So it's between midsize and oversize, between being heavy and light, between being powerful and controlled. And it's just it's versatile. And that's what's so great about it. And I think that's why it's been so successful for almost 25 years now, this franchise. And, it's just, there's kind of something for everybody in the line. I mean, the one that's the most popular is the 100 square inch, weighs a little over 11 ounces strung, 16 by 19 string pattern. I mean, every brand's kind of got their iteration of that. You know, moderately wide beam, not too thin, not too thick. So it just gives you a good kind of well-rounded design that works for so many different player types. And then if you want an oversized version, there's PureDrive 107, PureDrive 110. I mean, they even have larger headed versions. There's lighter versions. So the gamut of the PureDrive family is now fully available. They did an early release last fall of the 100. Now they've rounded out the line with all of the models. And the beauty of it is that they really didn't try to reinvent the wheel here. I mean, it's such a great design. They evolved it. That's the best way I can put it. They didn't just spray paint it a new color and try to sell you, you know, a new version of it. No, I mean, there's some nice updates they've made to it. They've added a little more of the dampening material. They call it SWX Pure Feel. So it's basically viscoelastic polymer that they infuse into the layup of the racket when they're making it. So you can't see it, but it's in the frame. It's really there and it really does work. It just acts as a vibration filter. I hesitate to call it a dampener because a dampener makes you think, oh, it feels like rubber, no feel, kind of numb. Not at all. They do a really good job, I think, of really engineering those layups properly, getting the right amount of feedback still coming through, but then dampening out some of the harshness. So again, they just kind of evolved that. They also use a slightly different, I don't even want to say it's a cross section, but they call it high torsional rigidity, HTR, and it basically just makes the frame a little more stable on off-center hits. Again, it's something you're not necessarily going to see so much, but when you hit with it, it just feels a little more stable than the previous gen. That's always a nice thing, a little more stability. When you hit it off center, that's pretty much all I know how to do. So it's pretty helpful in that regard. Optimized string spacing. So the string pattern has stayed the same from the previous generation, but they just always are looking for ways to optimize the spacing of the string pattern. So that helps on off center hits as well. But again, just little tweaks here and there across the family. That I think really just make the racket an improvement over the previous gen. And, but again, they're not trying to fix what wasn't broke in the first place. So it's just a nice, nice evolution, and it does look cool. So an added bonus.
Mm-hmm. Now for the record, infused polymer, the over under was the 14 and a half minute mark that it would get dropped on this pod, and you hit the over just barely. So congrats Great. To all the over bettors on that. But, a basic question here, and I think I know the answer, but again, these are the questions you can ask when we have you on. When you talk about an oversized version of a racket versus an original, is it safe to – well, I don't want to make any assumptions. So why – you know, if you are trying to get the racket in its purest form, you're trying to play the racket as it was created to be played – does getting an oversized version of a racket compromise that? And I think the answer to that is obviously yes. So my question would be, you know, in what ways does it compromise it? And if you're someone who's looking for a bigger frame, is it just better to look for a larger size frame racket in its original form than to get an oversized of something else?
Well, but here's what I would say to that. One, I don't think it necessarily compromises what you would expect from the family. Okay. And I think, and the reason for that is because there's definitely a trend in the marketplace with there not being as many oversized options. You know, back in the day, I mean, you could get rackets that were 110, 115, mm-hmm. 118, pretty consistently from most of the brands. And it's a little tougher to find that now. Now, there's still some out there, but most of the time they are kind of extensions of the main franchises in the racket brand. This is a perfect example of that. They take these 100 square inch kind of backbone of the racket families and then take a lot of the design principles that are incorporated in those and just blow them up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, so the beam design's the same, but it's a little bit thicker. So if you look at the cross section sideways, it's a little bit thicker. Mm-hmm. It's 7 to 10 square inches bigger. Again, we're talking square inches. So you lay the rackets on top of each other, you can barely tell the difference between a 100 and a 110. Mm-hmm. And then they might make it a little bit lighter, a little more head heavy. But again, it's just taking that recipe that's worked so well for them and then just expanding it slightly to give you a little bigger sweet spot, you know, maybe a little more forgiveness, a little bit lighter weight, a little bit easier to swing. So, but I think most of the brands have done a pretty good job of just making extensions of their existing, you know, product families and maybe just making an oversized version, a larger headed version, because the days of there being kind of standalone, oversized groups of rackets from each brand, those days are gone. What you get now is basically an oversized version of the Pure Drive, the oversized version of like the Wilson Clash. So, you know, every brand treats it a little differently, but they are generally extensions of existing silos. So,
okay. No, so it sounds like they're all just blown up to scale. It's just the 110.
Yeah, no, that
makes a lot of sense. I guess because to your point, as you mentioned, and I very much agree with this, it's you don't see big head-sized rackets anymore, right? I feel like that is the trend, trending away from that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think some of it, too, might have been just dwindling sales in that market. I mean, that tends to be maybe an older consumer that, you know, maybe there's just not as many people playing, that they're aging out. Maybe they were jumping over to play pickleball more than tennis. And so just maybe some of that demographic was shifting a little bit too. So I also think though too, I mean, the sweet spot on the Babolat Pure Drive that's, you know, 100 square inches is
healthy.
Many times larger than the sweet spot I would have enjoyed playing up with, growing up with, you know, Agassi's old Don A Pro One or, you know, the Prince Graphite or whatever it may have been. Just the racket designs are so much better now, I think. The sweet spots are so much more generous that you don't actually have to make the physical head size of the frame so big to make it easy to hit with.
For the record, you're breaking my heart with the Prince Graphite slander. You know that's still my baby.
We can't talk about Prince though. So
yeah, it's true. It's
I
used to
play with him too. So
yeah, no, yeah, which shall not be named. I agree. but no, I think that's completely fair. I mean, yeah, there's no denying the racket technology has gotten better, and I guess I'll use this as a bridge to a segue. One more topic I wanted to talk about, because certainly, and there was so much tennis over these past 3 weeks, college, professional, junior, you name it, it's all going on right now. And if you watch enough of it closely, you will see the trend across every level, which is that these players, men, women, it doesn't matter, are hitting the ball harder than they were even 5 years ago, certainly 10, 15 years ago. And of course, you know, that is in any sport, you hope for evolution. You hope the players will continue to get better. People can make the argument that 90s basketball is different than 2010 basketball, but a 2010 NBA player is more skilled than a 1990s basketball player is, because that's just how life evolves, or at least in good ways. When life evolves, that's usually how it evolves. All of that being said, and I say this about the ear test all the time, if you listen to Felix Auger-Aliassime or Andrei Rublev or Aryna Sabalenka or Elena Rybakina hit ground strokes, it sounds like a jet is taking off. Like, it just sounds differently than anyone else who's doing it out there. And maybe Del Potro would hit that speed from time to time before. And, you know, obviously Stan Wawrinka, the best of the best, can do it.
Yeah.
But when you... I think it's every forehand now. When Andrei Rublev connects with a forehand, or Felix Auger-Aliassime connects with a forehand, it's scary how hard they can hit the ball. And I just, you know, my question I wanted to ask is, how much is that a and the answer is obviously both, but how much of it is a product of the newly developed strings and racket frames available to these players?
I mean, I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, again, going back to the 90s example with Carlos Moya, you know, when he won the French Open, I think he was also the first player to win a Grand Slam tournament using polyester string. I may be wrong about the polyester string, but it was Luxilon string. And I think that's where some of that started, the ability to build these kind of bigger, more powerful rackets with the wider, thicker beams that were stiffer. But then you were able to string them with a material that actually allowed you to control that additional power. You know, it used to be back in the day. I mean, I grew up with this. You know, if you wanted a stiffer string, or if you were breaking a lot of strings and you needed more more durability, you know, your main option was to go the hybrid route, which at the time was Kevlar. So you put Kevlar in the main strings and you'd have synthetic gut in the crosses. And that would give you more durability, you know, a little stiffer string bed feel. I know Agassi used that for a long time, probably some other players too. But, you know, that was basically what you could do at the time. But it was extremely unforgiving. Now that they've been able to develop some of these polyesters and co-polys that, you know, have incredible durability, they give you that string bed stiffness, but then they allow you to kind of take a full swing at the ball and just generate topspin like you've never been able to generate before. So that's how these players are able to take these just huge cuts at the ball, and it stays in the court. I mean, that's the thing with tennis is all this power is great, but not if you can't keep it in the court. And the ability to generate spin is just mind-blowing too, because the way they're swinging at the ball, I mean, that's where the top spin comes from. It's the swing plane. So it's really amazing, but I think it's a combination of the string and the racket technology, obviously, that's allowing them to play the way they do. Now, the flip side to that is, what does that do from an injury standpoint? You know, because you're able to put those stresses on your body and you're having to swing kind of that hard and fast, you know, for 3-4 hours at a time, you know, round after round after round. It seems like you see a lot more injuries now. And I can't help but think that there's, you know, something to the wear and tear that you're putting on your body. And it's maybe not necessarily tennis elbow or things that are directly related, but I think it's the strain and the stress that you're putting on your body by being able to swing so hard and fast at every single shot. I mean, it's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, yeah, the racket speed these players generate, it's out of this world. When Andre Rublev swings a racket, get out of his way. Like, just, I mean, I feel like if you ever played in a junior clinic, probably happened at least once when you got hit by someone hitting a forehand on a crowded day in line. And, like, if Andre Rublev hits you, you are guillotined. Like, the head is severed. It's over. Yeah, and it's not going to be great. And it's just, I mean, it's so incredible. I agree with you. And, again, it is the fact that these players can rein in the additional 10% of power offered to them by the technological developments, that's where everything comes together, and it's just extraordinary to watch. And of course, again, it's not just Babolat rackets that are continuing to advance. We also have a new head, I believe, Radical and Black Speed racket models. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about them?
Yeah, so the you know, kind of the evolution that Head's been making throughout their line over the years is they've used a you know, very light, a very strong material called graphene. So they've kind of evolved the graphene technology throughout the years in their racket line. This one they call it Graphene 360 Plus, and it basically takes the Radical recipe that they've used over the years, which are player-focused rackets, you know, thinner beams, slightly smaller head sizes for a player that swings pretty hard and fast. This was the franchise they developed for Agassi back in the day, and then kind of evolved that to some of their other tour players. I think Sloane Stephens, their face of the franchise at this point. I think Andy Murray might still be playing with it. They just don't put him in any of the marketing stuff anymore. But no, it just takes that recipe of that thinner beam, control-oriented, maybe a little bit lighter weight. But again, it's for somebody that swings pretty hard and fast. Graphene 360 Plus, it's got a material in it called Spiral Fiber, and it just gives it a little crisper feel. This is another one where they didn't try to reinvent the wheel. They just kind of evolved the previous Radical franchise. Again, putting these spiral fibers into the frame. And I think it just gives it a little crisper hit. It just feels really solid. It's one you got to hit a little more in the middle of the frame. Not probably quite as forgiving as something like the Pure Drive. Head's kind of got their version of that, though, too. So, but the Radical, cool looking. It's always been this really bright, kind of bold, orange, black cosmetic. This year, they kind of went orange silver. So, yeah, they look really cool. You know, if you like the previous Radicals, you'll probably like this update as well. And then the Speed Blacks are, I mean, I have to say it, they're just a cosmetic, but it's basically Novak's franchise, the Speed franchise. Again, it's that thinner beam, control-oriented, feel-oriented. And they've painted it up to be all black, which is what Novak's It's what Novak's been using on court now for about a year and a half. And it started as a little marketing exercise, I think about a year and a half ago, for the U.S. Open, where they had him use a limited edition black version of the Speed racket. They made those available at retail as well, just in very small numbers, and those sold through. Well, Novak didn't want to give it up. He wanted to keep playing with it, and I'd say it's been working fairly well for him. So, Ed's like, well, what do we have to do to capitalize on this? Well, we need to come back out with the Speed racket. So that's what this is, Graphene 360 Speed, or Graphene 360 Plus Speed models in the black cosmetic. And you can get that in the Speed Pro, which is Novak's spec. He uses something a little different, of course, but then they make the Speed MP as well. But both of those, very player-focused, advanced, thin beam, control, feel. But they look really cool. It's just a really, really minimalist aesthetic. So that one's just a cosmetic, but still pretty cool. And if you like playing with what Novak looks like he plays with, that's it.
It's a beautiful model of, and I have to say, I think the all one color look for rackets is clearly a trend we're seeing. Like, it's just, that is what's preferred right now. I think people really like the, you know, the all black, or, you know, the all dark red with a shade of black on the inside, or whatever it may be. I feel like that is, am I wrong here? I feel like that's what I'm seeing in non-Babolat rackets.
Yeah, I could ramble on a while on this topic, but part of it's the challenge that the brands have, I think, with keeping the line fresh.
Sure.
So I think they're almost taking like a fashion view of racket cosmetics. Mm-hmm. Because you really can't, come out with a new iteration of a racket every year. I mean, there's just no way. You can't have meaningful changes that would come out. So I think it's a way to freshen the lineup, you know, create new marketing stories, and do it in a way that's, you know, that's fun, that freshens it up. But again, it's really just being sold as a cosmetic update. And we're really seeing that across most of the racket brands. But I think it's a way to, again, freshen up along, you know, rackets typically have a 2-year product cycle, if not a little bit longer. So how do you keep that fresh for 2 whole years with everybody's attention span getting shorter? Well, you inject some fashion into it. You come up with some colorways, some limited editions. The racket that Rafa's playing with, we'll talk about next time, but that's a cosmetic. But he's been playing with it for the better part of a year now. We're now going to be able to sell that at retail in March. So there's more of that coming out, but I think the brands aren't trying to literally and figuratively paint it as something completely different. Mm-hmm. It's really just a cosmetic. It's just a way to freshen it up and keep it fun and give another story to tell. So we're fine with that. We like that.
No, it looks good. Absolutely. Hey, everyone needs a cosmetic lift every once in a while, rackets
sure.
included. So, everybody. No, there's nothing wrong with that. And look, it's not just rackets, right? Shoes as well. I believe the new Nike React Vapor NXTs are out. As someone who has always worn Nike shoes, and I just feel like it's one of those things, once you start wearing them, you're kind of hooked because they are a little bit different than everything else. The Vapor NXT is likely going to be my next shoe. Why should it be everyone's next shoe?
Well, I mean, the Vapor franchise has been around for a while for Nike. I mean, it started out as the shoe they built for Federer back in the day. Obviously, he's moved on to another brand now. But, you know, the idea with Vapor was always kind of like that low to court, you know, still comfortable, but lightweight, speed, fast, you know, very comfortable. And this shoe, it's interesting because it's the 11th iteration of the Vapor for tennis. And I'd say it's probably the beefiest version of the Vapor that I've ever seen. I mean, I've worn the shoe kind of off and on over the years. Personally, I wear the Nike Cage 4 Rafa shoe. And that's a, you know, 6-month warranty shoe. It's not because I need that. It's just, it's comfortable. It feels really good. Cushioning's really, really solid. And the Vapor to me always felt a little bit like there wasn't as much shoe there. Maybe it wasn't as cushioned, good, bad, or otherwise. That was the difference. So this Vapor is interesting because they've added React foam to it, which is something they've used in, running for a little while. And it's, the idea with it is supposed to give a more of a responsive feel to the shoe, hence the name React. And so they put that in just a few little parts of the React vapor, and it's interesting. But what I would say is that the shoe definitely has a little more heft to it than the previous versions. So when you put the shoe on, I actually think it feels a lot like the Cage 4, which kind of caught me by surprise. But it's got that sort of sock sleeve that you pull on, gives it a really glove-like fit. It looks super technical, which Nike's kind of known for. No surprise there. And then when you have it on, I mean, it feels really good, but it's just got like a nice plush ride to it, which I don't think the previous vapors necessarily had. So for the person that knew that old vapor, they liked that low to the court feel, maybe a little more minimalist feel. This is not that. It's just a little different, but I think it's a really cool evolution. Nike does have some other things coming for the next season, April, which might be a little closer to what you're used to if you're a vapor player. They call it the Vapor Pro. I can't really say much about it yet because it's not out, but I feel like this Vapor NXT is just like, it takes it to another level. Personally, I think it feels more like the Cage 4, a little beefier shoe, but you know, Vapor Pro will be coming soon, and I think that might be a little closer to what people are expecting from this Vapor franchise. So I'm just being extremely candid here, but you know, we'll see. The jury's out on the Vapor NXT because it's so new. It just launched, I think, 15th of February. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's definitely exciting. Looks really cool. And, you know, ultimately the customer decides. So we'll see what comes.
I'm looking across the board right now on the website. I'm like, what am I still good enough to wear? I'm like, all right, I probably can't wear the bright reds, like, because I've seen my forehand. But no, they are all awesome. I mean, it's Nike. It is what it is. You know what you're getting. Yeah, exactly. You know what you're getting with Nike. Absolutely. Well, you know, of course, with that in mind, Dave, there's just one last thing I want to do, and it's talk a little bit about some of the cool things we have in store moving forward. And you know, obviously I'll keep you on here while I talk about them, some of the very fun things. And of course, we are eternally grateful, all of you listeners hear me say it day in day out on this Mini Break podcast, for the continued support you guys at Midwest Sports give all of us. We're really excited to be, you know, spreading the love now to some of our listeners, as well as we are going to be launching a picks pool moving forward for all of the action going across the tennis world. Now there will be more details to come, how to sign up. All of these things will be available on our website, crackedrackets.com, on Midwest Sports, I'm sure, and on our various social media channels. But what we're going to be doing each and every month is we're going to be offering that picks pool. You can name every day a player you think is going to win, either on the men's or women's tours. From there, at the end of the month, the people with both the person with the longest win streak and the person with the best record going to end up getting a Midwest Sports, some sort of Midwest Sports giveaway. I don't think we've decided exactly what it is yet, Dave. I'll, again, leave that to the big wigs like you, but we've got that going on. And then, of course, we're going to get you on this show at least once a month. You know, we're going to circle in that first week of every month so we can recap who won the picks pools. We're going to, you know, talk a little bit about the newest things offered at Midwest Sports as well. All things we're really excited about here at Cracked Rackets, Dave. And so, obviously, once again, thank you for all of your continued support.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on. I enjoy this. Again, just to any of your listeners, just anytime you're looking for any guidance on things, whether you're new to the game, coming back to the game, a grizzled veteran, whatever things you might be looking for. If you have any questions, definitely feel free to reach out to us. We're here 7 days a week. You can talk to us on the phone. You can chat with us, send us an email, however you choose to interact. But yeah, we're always here to kind of help guide you through the latest things. And don't be afraid to reach out. I mean, we like to think we're experts in things, but we don't want to be intimidating either. We want to make sure that we're always open and available to take your questions, no matter what level you're at. So, you know, definitely don't hesitate. And I love having these conversations, Alex. So. Yeah.
It is always, as I say, always my pleasure. If, within that spirit, I may steal Matt for like a 5-minute ad read, because I've got like a scrappy alto voice, but he's got that deep baritone we're looking for when it's, you know, MidwestSports.com, the promo code is CR15. Like, I feel like he'd probably be a little bit better at it than I am, so I may steal him from you for like a quick 5-minute sound bite. But no, it is always our pleasure to have you, Dave. Obviously, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alex. Likewise to you. Mm-hmm. Bye, everybody.
Yep. Of course. Take care. Hope all of you enjoyed my conversation with Midwest Sports' Dave Lemke. A huge thank you to him and the entire Midwest Sports team for the support they give us here at Cracked Rackets. Remember, if you have any equipment needs, you can find all of the best gear, all of the best prices, and the best help in the business by talking to our friends at Midwest Sports. Go to MidwestSports.com, use that promo code CR15. Couple of other quick things before we wrap today's show. I will be back tomorrow because there's too much good tennis going on around the world. And as you all know, I like to talk. And so we're going to talk about all of the great action, all of Friday's quarterfinal or semifinal matches in the case of the WTA event in Australia. We'll be back to talk about whatever tennis we see unfold on Saturday as well. On Sunday, we're bringing back Cracked Rackets Red Zone. We've got two matches in mind. Pepperdine hosting TCU. I think that's the 4 p.m. match, but the 3 p.m. match, my first USC Trojan UCLA Bruin battle. See, I'm so excited. I'm flabbergasted. Was supposed to be in person there last year. Instead, we're going to be covering it on Red Zone. So we'll have both of those matches available on our YouTube channel. If you are a college tennis fan, be sure to join us for the call of those two matches. And last but not least, and I sincerely hope all of you listen to this point of the podcast, because as you know, there are many people behind the scenes who make these podcasts happen. Two of the most important. Let's start with man number one, the man on top, the man who makes the wheels turn here at Cracked Rackets, the man who took a chance on me when I was just this renegade, unrefined, still am a renegade, unrefined, but just, you know, kid who liked to talk a lot about tennis. I'm probably still that as well, but in Dalton Thieneman, our Cracked Rackets CEO, who has a birthday today. And sincerely, he is the busiest man on the planet. He's got a job. He's got a wife. He's got me and Westhoff, his two kids, and Jamie, his third kid as well. And yet, he still makes it all happen. I don't know if he actually ever sleeps, but I know that if I ever have a question for him, he will always respond to me in a moment's notice. And, you know, again, I hope everyone out there who's listening to this works for someone who fosters creativity, who gives you the leash, who instills trust in you, or gives you the trust and just, you know, builds a foundation of a business based on that trust between employees, that we all have the same goals in mind and that we're all working as hard as we can to accomplish what we want to do. Anyways, I'm blowing a lot of smoke up his butt. He deserves it all. The best boss I could ever ask for. And yes, he is my boss. And sincerely, I will forever remain loyal to him. So happy birthday to UDT. Before we get the birthday sound effect, happy birthday to the OG super producer, Max Fliegner. No disrespect, Daniel Westhoff, but I can tell you where I was. And, you know, Fliegner was home from Dartmouth for the summer going into his senior year. He was taking classes at Michigan, and he was like, "Do you have an extra room at your apartment?" Because I was getting ready to graduate. And I was like, "We do have an extra room. You're more than welcome to stay with me. One of my roommates has already gone to New York." And so he moved in. And it was the beginning of June, and I was like, "Hey, I have this idea. It's French Open. Can you record a podcast? Because I think I want to do this thing, whatever, whatever, whatever." And he was like, "Sure, I'll give it a go. Why not? Yeah, I have the technical capability." And, you know, 3.5 years later, here I am. So it is also the birthday of super producer Max Fliegner. And last but not least, and we shouted this out on the Great Shot podcast, also the happy birthday of Chris Helios's better half, Chrissy. So, to Dalton, to Fliegner, to Chrissy, happy birthday to you all. Westhoff, give me that birthday sound effect, please. And with that in mind, for our wonderful super producers, Max Fliegner and Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Midwest Sports, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I am your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say, folks? That's the break. And we will see you all next time. Thanks, everyone.